Okay, let's have a look. Let me say some things about this particular extract from this particular speech. So if we imagine that I was commenting this as a poor, young, pathetic student, then let's see what I would do. Well, of course, first of all, then, the fact is that this is the day before he was assassinated. His life was getting more and more dangerous. Indeed, at the end of this speech, not in this extract, but at the end of this speech, he says, one day we will be successful. I may not be with you at this time. People say, oh, this was his last speech and he said this. It's an incredible coincidence. Not really. He was being threatened more and more. He didn't know anything, but you know, he knew he was in danger. And indeed, he says at the end of this speech that when he got on the plane, they had to delay the plane because there'd been a bomb threat. Nevertheless, he was not generally a naive man. He was a serious political leader, but he was a little bit naive in some ways, because every time they went to Memphis, they went to the same hotel and stayed in the same room, which had a balcony. This was not great. It was not good organization. And he was killed on the balcony, and anybody could find out where he was, in fact. It was not a secret, so that not so good. But you know, it's easy to say so afterwards. So he will be killed the following day by a white racist. It's gone. What's happened here? Why is it no longer displaying? There we go. No, it is. Whoops. There you go. Just let me get this thing up. Yeah, so he was killed the following day by a white racist, James Earl Ray, who shot him when he was on the balcony, and then escaped to Canada and flew to London, but he was arrested in London and brought back to and extradited to the internet. Now, if you look on the internet, you'll find quite a number of people saying it wasn't really him; it was someone else. But they found his gun with the fingerprints, you know. I think it's just a conspiracy theory thing. I think it was him. Although we don't know exactly why, but there you go. So that's the importance of the time of this speech. And the very general context of this speech is what to do with the heritage of slavery and with racism. What to do. Something has to be done. And Martin Luther King said, yes, radical action, using non-violence based on Christianity. That was his big thing, and he brought it in. And he was, he certainly did not always win, but he had some serious victories, some things. But it was just one suggestion. There were many other suggestions around, and he's going to talk about some of them here. Now, the other thing we'll have to do is this. Always anchor our external direct action with the power of economic withdrawal. Now, we are poor people. We, in this case, is black Americans, 20 million black Americans. Individually, we are poor when you compare us with white society in America. We are poor. Never stop and forget that collectively, that means all of us together, collectively, we are richer than all the nations in the world with the exception of 9. So in fact, if you take 20 million Americans, who are not the richest, that's still major. Most of the countries in the world, everybody's poor. In America, first of all, in America, poor is not poor in the same way as in rural India or in Ethiopia or something. So that's what he's saying. We have power. Did you ever think about that? After you leave the United States, Soviet Russia, Great Britain, West Germany, France, and I could name the others, the Negro collectively, so he uses the word Negro here to mean what we would say today, African American. And also, if you were commenting this text, you might want to say, if you knew, I will now tell you, something about the vocabulary, because vocabulary has changed tremendously, that Negro was the normal word in the 1960s and it isn't today. For a while, the most popular word was black. I mean, the most popular word among progressives. And then Afro-American. And then African-American. You see the difference. First of all, Afro-American sounds like you're American with a bit of Afro. African-American is much more emphasis on the African. And also makes it link with other people, because we talk about Irish-Americans, German-Americans. And so that's the idea. So it's the idea of, let's remember where we came from. But the word black does not say, let's remember where we came from, just the word. So the vocabulary has changed, and other things have changed as well. One of the most well-known organizations in the United States, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. But today, the word colored people is no longer acceptable. In fact, it's only racists who use this word now. Things change very quickly sometimes when you're old. Okay, so there is an importance to this vocabulary. The Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there if we know how to pool it. So let's get together our economic power. So economic power, this means our power as consumers, as customers, as people who buy things. Now, this is not a completely new idea. The Montgomery bus boycott was very much based on the bus companies went bankrupt or had great financial difficulties. So economic power, it has a whole history. This is just one strand, because if you look back, you see he's now talking about economic power. So if you're commenting it, you say, okay, economic power, what does this look like in Martin Luther King's political life? Well, the Montgomery bus boycott is economic power. It's not only economic power. It's also individual empowerment, refusing humiliation. So economic power is important. If you look at the sit-ins in the restaurants, that's not economic power. They weren't telling. The history of nonviolence of nonviolent action of Martin Luther King is sometimes economic power, sometimes not. And certainly, economic power is not the center. The center is we are all God's children, and you need to talk to your white brothers and see if you can make them understand that you are God's children too. Yeah. But here he is in some ways, in the next section, in some ways I think he is moving, he's adapting to the new situation. The new situation is there's a lot of people saying, non-violence here, let's have black power. Inside the Student Non-Violent Coordinating Committee, some people are saying, we only want black members. Said white people should go and talk to whites and sort out racism in the white community. We need to know as black people that we are doing it ourselves. So let's have an organisation which has only black people in it. I don't know the details of the organisations. For example, the Black Panthers were black. Surprise. But I don't know if they had no white members or if they had a couple of white members. I suspect that they did not have white members. I suspect they have this idea. Now, this is not about hating white people. It's saying, hey, white people, go and talk about racism to white people, and we need to do this ourselves. Now, of course, this has advantages and disadvantages, and everybody disagrees about it. Yeah, so it's a huge debate. And of course, you are not supposed to. We're not interested in what your opinion is. Just we're interested to show that you understand the arguments. So here, in this situation, where Christian nonviolence, it has to be said, is less important to activists year after year, just like religion in general. He's talking about something which would interest the black power people. So here is what he's going to say. We don't have to argue with anybody. We don't have to curse and go around acting bad with our words. We don't need any bricks and bottles. We don't need any Molotov cocktails. Now, he's not imagining bricks and bottles and Molotov cocktails. There are a series of riots in American cities against racism and against police racism. So he's talking about something that's really happening. And when there are riots in the black parts of town in Chicago, Martin Luther King does not denounce the rioters. He says it's not the right solution, but he doesn't denounce the rioters. He doesn't say, oh, I hope the police arrest them all. His attitude is it's an understandable but incorrect response. So he's talking. So he's rejecting violence, and he's talking about real things. Yeah, bricks and bottles. See, notice there is no organization in all of the civil rights movement. There is no organization that says, you know what we want to do. City conservable, Mr. Napaitifi. See if I can find him. Here you go. Bull O'Connor, the white police, the racist white police chief. There is no organization organizing to assassinate him. You know, so there are organizations which say only non-violence, and there are organizations which say, oh, sometimes you have to fight and you might need some bricks and bottles, but there's no military organization involved, which is conceivable. Remember, in Ireland there's a military organization. In Vietnam, of course, there's a military organization because they're in a war. It's one option which can be used, but it's not used in this case. So he's rejecting the small-scale violence of rioters, really. This is not military violence. Even Molotov cocktails are not military violence because, you know, against an army, you'll just lose. So you don't need... What do we need to do? We just need to go around to these stores and to these massive industries in our country, and we say, God sent us by here to say to you that you're not treating his children right. And we've come by here to ask you to make the first item on your agenda fair treatment where God's children are concerned. Now, if you are not prepared to do that, we do have an agenda that we must follow, and our agenda calls for withdrawing economic support from you. So notice the religious vocabulary, but try to look at the deep... You see, everybody commenting on this will say he uses religious vocabulary. But it's very, very specific. He doesn't just use it for himself. He says we should go and talk to people in religious terms. Appeal to them as not as, you know, modern non-violent people, not as fellow humans, but as fellow children of God. But nevertheless, there is a threat involved, like the Montgomery bus coin. We're all children of God, but we want you to go bankrupt if you're not going to treat the black people right. But what is interesting in the next section is... So he's going to talk, he's going to talk about economic power. So forcing people, you know, forcing shops and companies to change their policies, not by persuading them. Of course, Martin Luther King is very interested in persuading people. But in this case, this is force. You know? Do you want to lose all your customers? Okay, we'll change then. And as a result of this, we are asking you tonight to go out and tell your neighbors not to buy Coca-Cola in Memphis. Go by and tell them not to buy seal test milk. Tell them not to buy, what is the other bread? Wonder Bread. Okay, so we imagine that these are companies who are not treating their black workers well. That's the idea. This is not an individual action. He's not just saying, "Oh, please don't buy Coca-Cola." So go and tell your neighbors. Not even go and tell your friends. Go and tell your neighbors. You know, go and tell everybody. So campaign to organize the collective power of customers against these people. And what is the other bread company, Jesse? This is Jesse Jackson, who later will be an important leader of the civil rights movement. Tell them not to buy Hearts bread. As Jesse Jackson has said up to now, only the garbage men have been feeling the pain. Now we must kind of redistribute the pain. Now he speaks of the garbage man because the reason he is speaking today is in support of a strike by garbage workers, that is sanitation workers, you know, les éboueurs. One of the problems they had, there were a number of things, and I have a little bit of detail here about what happened. Yes, so in March 1968, King went to Memphis, Tennessee, you know, where Elvis came from, in support of black sanitation workers. The workers had been on strike for 3 weeks. And they wanted both higher wages and better treatment for black people. In one incident, the boss had divided black workers from whites, and when the weather was too bad to work, they sent all the workers home, but the white workers were paid and the black workers were not paid. And so King comes and gives this speech. Je crois y avoir un autre bout d'information là, mais peut-être pas. I have too many notes. We are choosing these companies because they haven't been fair in their hiring policy. So we imagine then that they're not giving jobs to black people. That's hiring policies, la politique d'embauche. So we imagine that. Now, as you know, this is a campaign for equal hiring policies, continues up to today. And even in France, you have campaigns where they use identical curriculum vitae, and the only difference is the different ethnicity, and they discover that you don't get the same reaction if you have a name which appears to be black or Muslim. They can begin the process of saying they are going to support the needs and rights of these men who are on strike, and then they can move on downtown and tell Mayor Lobb to do what is right. Okay, so this is a fairly straightforward use your economic power against specific enemies. A specific company because they don't hire black people. A specific company because then they are opposing the interests of the strikers. But in the next paragraph, he goes much further. And he talks about tactics which are not traditional for Martin Luther King, which are more Stokely Carmichael or Malcolm X. And that is, he's going to ask people to use black companies and not white companies in general. Not just when this white company has done something wrong, so let's boycott them. That's the Montgomery bus boycott. But in general, do not put your money in white banks. Put it in a bank which is run by black people, which is owned by black people, yes? I think it's a good idea, if you are capable. I think as long as you had, I think you would have to say that Malcolm X was, first of all, was not committed to nonviolence. That doesn't mean he liked violence. It just means he didn't think it was enough nonviolence, and that he was very interested in black power and felt that some action should be separate. Now, that kind of thing. Yeah. Donc, tant que vous ne faites pas une comparaison trop simple du genre il aimait la violence, absolutely, yeah. You can compare it to anything which is relevant, yeah? You can also compare Martin Luther King's speech to one of the other speeches, if you wish, yeah? Yeah. En général, presque tout le monde qui a une mauvaise note, c'est parce qu'ils ont paraphrasé, ils ont répété ce qui est dit dans d'autres mots, et ils n'ont pas montré qu'ils savent quel est l'objectif et quel est le contexte. En général, les gens, ils s'en sortent. Hein. Je sais que c'est quelque part, c'est plus stressant l'oral que l'examen écrit. Hein. Déjà parce qu'il y a quelqu'un qui vous regarde méchamment. Surtout si vous êtes le 13e qu'on fait passer. But not only that, we've got to strengthen black institutions. Now, peut-être Martin Luther King a dit ça avant, mais moi je ne l'ai pas vu. This is something relatively new. Because remember what he's been saying so far. He hasn't normally talked about black institutions. He's talked about the importance of radical action to oblige restaurants or schools or buses to integrate. That is, to stop humiliating black people. I think we should use the right vocabulary, yeah? Because segregation, it's quite a nice word, yeah? They're just separate. Yeah? Really, it's supremacy and humiliation. That's what it's about. Je suis désolé de raconter chaque semaine des choses tellement tristes et affreuses, mais c'est un peu ça l'histoire, je suis désolé. Il y a quelques années, je faisais un séminaire de master, et je voulais faire Histoire du racisme en Angleterre depuis 1945. Et la deuxième année, j'ai fait Histoire du racisme et de l'antiracisme. Parce que sinon, on était tous déprimés à la fin. C'était plus supportable. But not only that, we've got to strengthen black institutions. Okay, so we're not going to just speak to white people and make them understand we're all children of God. We're not just going to put pressure on general institutions like the presidents, like the Supreme Courts, like the bus companies, to get fair treatment. No, we're going to strengthen alternative institutions. So that's a little different. I call upon you. So quite a formal expression. I call upon you. Je vous appelle solennellement. I call upon you. It's a very formal expression. C'est moi, je vous demande si vous avez rien d'autre à faire. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown, because they are white banks, c'est pas dit, mais c'est ça, and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We want a banking movement in Memphis. Now, he has invented the word banking, but it's obviously based on sit-in. You know, sit-in, on s'assoit collectivement là où on ne veut pas de nous. On s'assoit collectivement pour changer les choses, et là, c'est on met l'argent en banque collectivement pour changer les choses. So go by the Savings and Loan Association. I'm not asking you something we don't do ourselves at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Voilà, si vous avez cet extrait à commenter, bon, là, en fait, vous avez de la chance parce qu'il utilise l'expression dans une phrase plus tard. Mais si vous ne savez pas qui c'est, là, c'est pas bon signe. Il faut savoir. Judge Hooks and others will tell you that we have an account here in the Savings and Loan Association from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. We're just telling you to follow what we're doing. Put your money there. You have 6 or 7 black insurance companies in Memphis. Take out your insurance there. Notez bien que ici, take out, c'est pas retirer, c'est souscrire. You take out an insurance policy, ça veut dire que vous le souscrivez. C'est un peu dommage parce que c'est take out your money from the white banks and take out insurance from the black insurance companies. Et le sens est le contraire. Now these are some practical things we could do. We begin the process of building a greater economic base, and at the same time, we are putting pressure where it really hurts. I ask you to follow through here. So he is suggesting something which has not been at the center of his political life, which has been more, which suggests more an idea of black power. And this has a long history. In the 1930s, there were black movements in the south of the United States who demanded a separate state for black people. They said, let's set up a separate state. Yeah. In the South, black people, I don't know what percent, but perhaps 30% of the population, something like that, in the South. And there was a movement saying, let's have a state for black people. And this, it was, you know, again, it was not a massive movement, but it gained significant support. So this is some of the different ideas of black separatism. Now these are very, very, it's a very wide range of ideas. In the smallest version, it's sometimes we need separate meetings for black people. That's the minimum, the smallest. The black Malcolm X. Malcolm X is not against white people, but he says we need a movement with only black people. White people, you don't worry about yourselves. Black people worry about black people. Then you get some of these more radical ideas like, let's all go back to Africa, black people. And of course, you know, those people say, well, that's a long way. Yeah. And this idea of a separate state in the 1930s, a separate state for black people. So Martin Luther's life is a contribution to a horribly difficult conversation on what to do with the trauma and the heritage of slavery. Which continues today with Black Lives Matter and so on. That there's lots of things which are definitely not finished, despite there having been now a black President of the United States, etc. And then, of course, today, if you go to Washington, D.C., the mayor is black. The majority of the population of Washington, D.C. is black. Yeah. This is also, it's very, very difficult for Europeans to understand America because it's completely different. The most important thing, but I think you're in the third year, so you understand that, is that black Americans are not immigrants. If you don't get that, you got nothing. But it's kind of tempting, you know, if you're looking at it for the first time. Okay, so there we have that particular thing, and I just want to have a look at the last two paragraphs of the whole speech. The last two paragraphs of the whole speech. In fact, we're going to listen to them through the wonders of modern technology. We're going to, listen to. These, as soon as I keep, if I have to press a number of times on suivant. How do you say get lost? Well, there you go. So I'm going to look up on YouTube to get his voice. You can actually get his voice if you search for Martin. Mountaintop. That didn't work. Let's try again.
My friends, as I listen to Ralph Abernathy and his we've got some difficult days ahead, but we have to check out everything carefully, and we've had the plane protected and guarded all night. And then I got into Memphis, and some began to say the threats, or talk about the threats that were out, or what would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. I've seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Okay, so the difficulty is to find precise vocabulary to talk about what he says. And so he's got this idea that he has a special vision, that he has seen the future. Yeah. If one of your friends said that in a pub, you say, oh, you've had too much whiskey. But this is part of, then this is obviously part of a religious view of the world, that he has an insight into what God wants for the world, and he's been asked by God to communicate it, and he is indeed in quite grand tones talking as if he was Moses. I've been to the mountaintop, I've been to the promised land, now I don't remember the details, but at some point Moses does something which God does not like, and as a result God says, I'm sorry Moses, but the people will get to the promised land, but you will not get there, you will die first. Il peut être aidé des fois, Dieu. Okay, and so there's an echo here of Moses. Now, if any of you want to be a historian, you have to read the Bible, in fact, because you know it's all in there. So then he ends, mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. So this is a millenarian visionary thing. I have seen the promised land. I have seen the Lord coming. And so he is comparing three things, really. First of all, the promised land which the Jews found in the Bible after 40 years in the desert, after having escaped from slavery. After 40 years, it's a long time, especially in the desert. Then he's comparing the coming of the Lord, because remember, Jesus is supposed to come again. He's late, but Jesus is supposed to come again, the second coming, the coming of the Lord, and he's comparing more practically a land of freedom for black people where racism has disappeared. And this is the I have a dream, which he said before, I have a dream that in this country people will be judged not on the colour of their skin but only on the content of their character. So visionary, this is the style. Is the style of Baptist preaching. And the audience are not supposed to keep quiet. That's normal in Baptist churches. You're not supposed to keep quiet. You're supposed to shout hallelujah and amen and things like that. That's normal, a normal thing to do. So you can see that this is kind of meeting. It's not just the content. You can imagine that, you know, people who are feeling humiliated every day, and then they go to see Martin Luther King and they come out and they feel 10 foot tall. Yeah, it's a political activity. It's not just a text. It's a political activity to boost people up. And also, they go and see Martin Luther King and they say, wow, look, he's continuing, even though his house was bombed and he's being threatened and insulted all the time. Maybe I could do a little more. Yeah, it's a really big encouragement thing. Last chance for questions. Well, thank you for listening for such a long time, and I will see you next week. Next week, we're going to talk.